Welcome to Shining Bright, the Farm Her radio show all about women doing great things. Women who are making the ordinary extraordinary. Women following their passion, taking action, and making a difference for themselves and others. Join me, Margie, as your host on Shining Bright by Farm Her. Hello, hello. Welcome to Shining Bright this week, and we have I am biased. I think every episode we have for you, I always say, is a great episode lined up this week. But this one I have titled Thriving Where You Are At. And if you haven't caught on, we like to theme our radio shows for the week around the TV show that's coming out that week. And so on our radio show, Shining Bright, this week, you are going to hear from Brenda Furkatich, who is a woman who is actually going to be on our TV show this week too. She is in St. Paul, Oregon, and she is running at life. And I named it this because she is really thriving where she is at. She, if you stop and look, it looks like she's probably like in a whirlwind most of the time. Three little kids working with her husband. And now they are the owners of the farm. And so they're the labor, they're the business managers, they're the marketers, they're all the things, and they're the parents too. And so many of you out there can relate to that. And I said these backwards, but first you're going to hear from someone named Elizabeth Long, who I thought this was interesting. I hear many people talking about, I experienced it before in my work in the insurance industry. You know, there's things that we have to deal with every day, like insurance, like lending, like banking, like, those operating loans that are so important to most of you out there. And I think sometimes there's questions that go unasked because we don't want to look silly, right? We don't want to seem like we don't know what we're talking about. But she gives us some pretty simple tips to think about what we need to know before we go in to talk to a banker, and what some of those conversations need to be once we get in there. So banking helps you thrive where you are at. So we thought that would be a great add to this episode as well. And in the interest of thriving where you're at, I am going to now read you a blog, a story that I wrote for Successful Farming magazine. Many of you I know get that. We've been doing these columns for, this is our second year of doing them. But this one comes out in April. Some of you probably already have read it, but I really like it, and I think it speaks to thriving where you're at. So it's Monday morning, and I would rather do anything than pull myself out of bed. My dog has other plans, so up I go. I dig out some completely mismatched but warm clothes and quickly glance out the door to almost freezing rain. Side note, I had failed to look at the weather and I got my dog all excited. So I turned to head back to bed, and then I looked down at the dog. She is literally dancing around my feet with excitement. I realize that I haven't hit the trail in a few days and my own mind is dancing with anxiety. So I make the decision to head out into the rain. Despite the pull of my warm bed, I know getting going is what will set my day off and my week off to the right start. So I throw on a warm hat and off I go. As I run down the path with the cold wind and rain hitting my face, I can't help but think that the ability to push myself to run in the rain is a lot like entrepreneurship or farming. There are many times where it is completely uncomfortable and I think about turning back, but just then I pass under a bridge and the rain is off my face for a few seconds. I get my second wind. I see my dog's ears flipping with excitement and I push on. I feel the fog lifting in my head and I speed up a bit. Just ahead is another hill, but I know that if I just keep going, I will get up it and to the flat ground above. Passion and persistence are all I need at this point. It's not the easy path. It's not what most would choose, but in the end, it is worth it. It may not always be money or accolades waiting there for me, but the pride in completing something that I'm passionate about is real. I'm blessed and lucky to be on this path, breathing in the sharp cold air, feeling the wet drops hit my face, and experiencing the world around me. So, next time you find yourself running in the rain, and I know many of you out there probably are feeling like you're doing that right now, remember, it's just another part of the journey. And honestly, like, I wrote this a long time ago, and it's just now running, and I'm reading this thinking, gosh, I needed to read this today. I need to hear this. I can push myself. I can push myself to thrive where I chose to be, where I want to be. This is my choice. This is what I want to do. And I know many of you are doing what you want to do, the thing that you could pick out that you would do the most in this world. And remember that you chose that. So we all have the ability to choose to thrive where we are at, whether that's running with freezing rain hitting your face or whatever that might be. Thrive where you're at. You have the ability to do that and find those tools that help you do that, whether that's lending, whether that's family, whether that's running in the rain. You've got it. So with that, stick with us. We're going to be back here in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking with Elizabeth Arm about some of the things we can do better with in asking about for ourselves on lending. And then we're going to have Brenda Furkatich on the line as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We have a really cool episode on tap today. We have been talking with Brenda Furkatich, who is a farmer and not a first-time farmer, but, you know, making her own way in her family operation in Oregon. And now we're going to kind of change the discussion a little bit and talk about women in farming from a lending perspective. So on the phone, I've got Elizabeth Long with Ag Resource Management. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to share a little bit of background on ag lending.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we jump into that, Elizabeth, let's get a little bit of background on you. How did you find your way to ag lending? Did you grow up on a farm?
I did. So I grew up on a small family farm in central Ohio. We raised corn and soybeans and then freezer beef. So I've always knew that I wanted to be involved in agriculture in some aspects. Had you asked me at 18, you know, do you think you're going to be a loan officer? I probably would have looked at you and been like, no, why would I do that? But I knew I wanted to be involved in agriculture. And it wasn't until I got my first job out of college and I went to the great Ohio State University and I majored in animal science. So it's not like I had a background in ag econ, but Farm Credit took the risk and brought me on and said, you know, we'll train you, we'll teach you that credit side. And I'm very thankful for that opportunity to start with Farm Credit, because I've spent some time with Farm Credit. I went to a community bank. I went to a regional bank. And now I've landed here at Ag Resource Management, where it looks at things completely different than a traditional lender, which I appreciate.
That's very cool. And I think we are fresh off of a Grow event that we just had. We've got more coming up. And these are events for young women. And we always talk about this. You know, sometimes you land where you didn't think you would, and then you get on this journey. And it sounds like you've had that. And you've, I'm sure, picked up some different things along the way and helped refine where you want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. That's a very true statement. I wanted to sell feed. And I remember sitting with my grandfather and him saying, I'd never buy feed off of you. And I said, well, why? He's like, you're a woman. And I'm like, what? Oh. So, I mean, that was one of those moments. I'm like, Grandpa wouldn't buy feed off of me. Are you kidding? So, I mean, it gave me that opportunity to say, you know what, if my grandfather wouldn't do it, that means I'm going to have to work twice as hard.
Yeah.
And even in lending, it's the same thing. You got to work twice as hard, you know, and it's fine. I don't mind it.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about that a lot too. You know, you're gonna have to run a little harder, a little faster, improve yourself a little bit more, but it can be done and
but it's worth it.
Know your stuff. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, my background was in the insurance industry, which is not lending, but is also not too completely different, you know, as far as how the industry is made up, I think sometimes. And so, I get you. I understand what you're saying. So let's talk kind of like Ag Lending 101. I would love to dig in more about some of the things that you see out there, some of the things that women should be asking, maybe kind of helping us know some of the terminology in the industry that, you know, I mean, I'm probably the worst culprit of this. I can think about times when we've gotten mortgages or I don't have a farm, you know, but in like a personal, like a mortgage home loan, you know, there's things that like people talk about and I'm like,
I don't really know what that is. Should I raise my hand? Should I ask? You know, or should we just like let it move on?
You should.
Yeah. Yes. First note, right? You should. So let's talk a little bit about the lending industry and maybe some of the issues that you are seeing in lending right now.
So it's a very good question. So the issues that we see in ag lending, in agricultural lending specifically, is it's tough out there. And it's not just tough in the aspect that, I mean, we all know commodity prices are down, right? We know input costs are up and commodity prices are down. Whatever industry or whatever segment of agriculture we're looking at, we know that to be a hard fact. But what we don't realize, or what a lot of people don't realize when they're sitting across from their ag lender, is that it's not their lender that does not want to help them. It's the FDIC. It's the banking regulators that don't understand agriculture. We always sit here and think about how the consumer is, what, 2 to 4 generations from the farm. Mm-hmm. You've got to remember, those people making that loan decision, it may not be that loan officer that you're with face-to-face every day, but it's the people behind him or her that are finalizing that decisions that are 4 or 5 generations removed from that farm.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest hurdle that you've got to think about, is you've got to present your farm or your operation in the best light possible. Be upfront, be honest with that loan officer, but you've also got to dumb it down, because there's a lot of people that are looking at that deal that are looking at the numbers. They're not looking at the person across from them. That loan officer is. That mortgage loan officer is having that conversation, but the people that are regulating it,
right,
they have no idea.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I guess I've never really thought about that. And so many times the people in front of us are who we like pin all that on. But you're right, there's mm-hmm. a lot more regulation behind the scenes and how that works.
Yep.
And yeah. So a lot of things going into play there, especially when you think about like a generational family farm, right? Like how important
Absolutely.
It is for that person sitting across the table from you to make sure that they have everything in place for it to be there, but to tell that story. So digging into that a little bit more, you said you really have to paint the best picture. What are some of the tips that you can give people to help paint that picture? Because I think like if that's what they need to do, you know, what does that look like?
Well, the picture's not going to be pretty. I mean, let's be honest with the way that things look right now. But be prepared to answer those questions that loan officer is going to have. Whether it's the wife or the spouse that's sitting there with the loan officer and the husband, make sure you know what your cost is to put in that acre of corn or that acre of beans or those wheat or cotton, whatever that commodity is. Make sure you know, this is what my true cost is. And this is where I can make those adjustments in order to make the deal work. So if you're prepared to know what your actual cost is for that operation, I think that can go tenfold on making sure that you have an accurate picture. It may not be pretty, but at least it'll be accurate so they can make a sound decision on this side of the table.
Yeah. And I'm sticking my neck out here, so correct me where I'm not right, but in knowing those numbers, that goes back to keeping the books and having
yes.
budgets and records,
yes.
right? Right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And I often see when customers come in and sit with me, if most of the time it starts with the husband that sits down, or you mentioned it's a generational farming operation, and it may not be the young guy, it may be grandpa or dad that's still making that decision, but they need somebody to help with the bookwork. And whether that's mom, grandma, or yourself, you need to be in that position where you're seeing the books. You're seeing what the actual cost is. You need to know that there is, you know, $300 in a bag for that seed corn. You need to be able to have those figures and see, okay, well, $300 for that bag of seed corn gets me X acres planted. That means my cost per acre is this. And you need to know that, because your significant other or the one sitting there talking to the salesman may not know that, because he's looking at it from the hybrid standpoint. He's yeah. saying, oh, well, this hybrid makes the best
Right.
You know,
right. It's not an agronomy decision. It's a decision of
financial.
Knowing where you're sitting and knowing where you need to go. So that was great advice. So know your numbers, I think, is what I took away from that.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for that. We're going to be back here in just a few minutes on Shining Bright. We're talking with Elizabeth Long from ARM and more to come on Ag Lending. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We are talking with Elizabeth Long from ARM. And Elizabeth, you're in Ohio, correct?
I am.
Yeah. And your position with ARM is, can you tell us a little bit about your specific position?
Sure. So I'm the market leader here in Ohio. We came to Ohio a little over a year and a half ago and opened this office here in Ohio. Ag resource management has been around for 10 plus years, and it started in the South and has kind of moved its way up the Corn Belt. So we've been here in Ohio for a year and a half, and I've gotten the opportunity to work specifically with row crop farmers in the great state of Ohio and work with them to prepare an operating line of credit that is tailored for their operation. Mm-hmm. So it's based on their production history. It's based on where they're selling their grain. So it's much more specific to their operation. And it's great because every operation is ran a little bit differently. Everyone's APH is a little bit different. Everybody sells their grain to a different location and may have a better contract or a worse contract. And it's nice to be able to be very specific for that operation for that given year.
Yeah. And as we all know, it can change drastically from year to year. My background was in crop insurance before I started Farm Her. And that's where we have a joint connection in Billy Moore, who you work with, I know. I'm watching all of this unfold in Nebraska and I'm just, you know, it's so devastating. But you look at it and I immediately go to the risk side of things, you know, not just on the company side. I mean, there's a lot of risk there, but gosh, I hope that they had the right things in place, you know, to manage that risk, especially as it relates to, you know, that's really important for loans that they might have on the operating side. So, just stuff that I wish never had to happen. And my heart goes out to them.
Absolutely. It's heartbreaking to see some of the footage that comes out of there.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's absolutely crazy. So bringing this back around to talking about women and their role in making these lending decisions, I talked to so many women playing many different roles on the farm, whether it's bookkeeper, whether it's tractor driver, whether it's parts runner, whether it's the main farmer,
all of the above,
you know, somewhere in between. And, you know, that is all included in farming because it's all wrapped up into that business that they have and that they're making work usually as a family. And, you know, we have this discussion a lot that while women may not always be front and center, they may not be the name on the credit card, they may not be the name of the loan, they're definitely there in helping make these decisions because these are financial decisions that affect their family very much so.
Yes.
Can you give me a little light on maybe what you see and why women should be involved in that decision making? I just gave you my perspective, I realize, but I'd love to hear from your perspective as it relates to a family farm.
I can't disagree at all with what you've said. This doing an operating line or a mortgage loan or whatever it is that you're borrowing funds for is going to affect you for years down the road. So if you're whatever role, like you've said, that you play in that operation, you need to understand the finances because if something unfortunate happens, whether it's a death, a loss of a farm, a bad crop year due to weather, you need to know what risk you're putting yourself in. So if that means, okay, well, we're going to do this operating line and we're going to mortgage our home in order to make this happen, you need to understand that that means if that loan does not get paid back, your home's at risk. You will lose your home.
Yeah.
And that's the worst case scenario, right? We don't want to get to that point, but you need to understand the risk that's gonna take place. And as a bank, no matter if it's us or it's a traditional lender, the last thing we want to do is take your home. But we need to make sure that we're secured. We need to make sure that at the end of the day, we're going to get paid back per the terms in which you signed on. So knowing, you know, those things, that what you're signing, don't just blatantly sign and say, oh yeah, you know, my husband's going to take care of this, it's fine. That's not the case. You need to know what you're getting involved in. Ask questions. You mentioned it, you know, when we first spoke about, you know, do I raise my hand and ask the questions? Yes. I would rather have 15 questions come at me from that wife, because she knows, or that girlfriend, because she knows what she's getting involved in. I would rather have those 1,000 questions up front, because when they walk out that door, I need them to be as comfortable with my organization and with myself, because this is a partnership.
Right.
I'm getting into this relationship with you, and I want to make sure that your operation succeeds. So I need you to know that you are comfortable with me and I'm comfortable with you. I mean, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. I think I've learned this more the older I've gotten, but keep asking those questions until you're comfortable too, right? Because sometimes like this little voice in my head is like, stop being that person that's asking all these questions that are probably kind of dumb. And I guess, you know, it's cliche, but there is no dumb question. Just keep asking, because you're the one signing on that or securing that, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, it's your name.
Yeah. And you know, we did a kind of a insurance 101 a number of months ago on this show, and we talked about some of those terms that maybe, you know, are things that people should know in securing their insurance, but like nobody actually does know. But like, you go to an insurance agent and they're throwing out all these acronyms at you. Is there anything like that in the lending industry that you hear and see and that might be a disconnect?
Oh, absolutely. So the biggest thing that I get is, and it does not matter who it is or how old they are, the term balance sheet. As simple as that is for us sitting on the side of the table, for a lender, it's like, what do you mean you don't know how to fill out a balance sheet? And I forget, because it's second nature for me. Filling out a balance sheet is, I do one every day. You know, it's second nature. But I forget sometimes that the person across from me, they can sit there and tell me, you know, what their population count is for their seed corn, but they can't tell me what their assets and liabilities are. And that's what breaks up a balance sheet. So, you know, align yourself with someone you're comfortable with. Sit down with that loan officer and say, hey, listen, I know you're going to need a balance sheet. I'm not comfortable filling that out. Can you help me?
Yeah.
And be prepared for the million questions he or she is going to ask you to get that balance sheet filled out and correctly. And the more information you give, the better off it is. Because we go back to that comment that I made earlier. We want to make sure that we paint the best picture of your operation. But we also need to be honest as far as where we sit on the liability side as well. So I think a balance sheet is probably the first term that most people look at me and get glassy eyed. And so what do you mean a balance sheet?
Yeah, I can understand that. And one thing I can attest to in starting my own business, you know, in the beginning, those things like I love to take pictures. I can tell a great story, but a balance sheet, or, you know, it sounds scary, but the more you do it, getting it done the first time is not always easy, but the more you do it, it's like a muscle. You start to remember how to deal with it and what you need to put into it.
Yep.
Yeah. So it does get easier.
Absolutely.
Right?
It does. It sure does. And, you know, I've got growers that have worked with me for a couple of years or have come with me from previous organizations. And I feel like we've gotten that rapport built. So I can sit down and say, okay, well, let's look at last year's balance sheet. Let's make some changes, because whether your equipment value has changed, which we've seen that, your real estate value has changed. You know, let's update those.
Yeah.
Let's update where you are with, you know, what grain has been carried over from last year, or what breeding stock you've got.
So that relationship.
That helps.
Yeah. And I think it all goes back to relationship. Elizabeth, we're just about out of time. How can people get a hold of you if they want to find out more?
Absolutely. So they just need to go to our website, armlend.com. So armlend.com, and you can get your local office.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been excellent.
No problem. Thank you.
Here we are on Shining Bright, and I'm excited to have Brenda Ferketich on the line. Brenda, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, yes, all the way from Oregon. So we're over here in Iowa, so it's a ways away.
Yeah.
So Brenda is going to be on Farm Her on RFD TV, our TV show, tomorrow night, the April 12th. And we had so much fun at her farm. Actually, I've seen, Brenda, I know you haven't seen the cuts of the show yet, but I've seen them, and it is a really great show. And from our perspective, it was a really fun thing because your farm is so diverse and it's so very different from really any of the other farms that we've ever been to. So kind of some fun stuff. So there's a teaser for everybody. You got to tune in and see what's going on over there in Oregon. But Brenda, let's start with talking a little bit about you. Let's take it way back. Let's talk about your connection to agriculture growing up and kind of what led you back to the farm.
Yeah, so I grew up, I'm a third generation on this farm. So I grew up out here in St. Paul, Oregon, and we farm about 1,000 acres. So our farm growing up was kind of the same size that it is now, actually. But I really loved it. I love being outside all the time, living on the farm, living out on the land, and, you know, growing up in a small town was great. But then kind of as I got older, I realized, you know, there's a lot more of the world out there. So I was getting pretty antsy to leave. And so once the time came and I graduated high school, I decided I wanted to go down to Loyola Marymount for school and get a business degree. And I honestly never really saw myself as kind of coming back to the farm. I thought I would maybe go, you know, maybe in an agricultural direction, but sort of on the business side of things. And at the time in my head, that did not mean coming back to the farm. So after about a few years, I think it was my junior year, I finally decided, you know, gosh, what a business opportunity I have, you know, waiting for me back at home possibly. And so that's when I talked to my parents and I decided I wanted to head back to St. Paul. They were supportive, but they told me I had to stay and finish my degree in Los Angeles, which was kind of shocking to me. I was ready to get back. Yeah, exactly. Like, wait a minute. And my dad said, well, you got to finish what you started and I can teach you the soil. I can teach you, you know, the cropping side or the cropping cycles here. But what I can't teach you is the business side. So I need you to stay and work hard and get that degree and then come back and we'll see what we can do. So that's kind of was the start of a different direction for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So what year did you move back to Oregon and really insert yourself at the farm? And also, if you could tell us a little bit about what those early days on the farm looked like, because if I remember right, you came back as an intern, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So in 2006 is when I graduated from Loyola Marymount. And then I came back that fall. And I guess my mom and dad were a little hesitant to see kind of where I would fit in. You know, farms are run with the same employees often for, you know, they've been there for a really long time. So the farm was sort of in a good groove of kind of the same people working there every day. And they just weren't quite sure how I was going to fit in. And so my mom had the idea of, hey, why don't you offer her an internship and sort of take out that pressure and that emotion of, you know, you have to decide today if you're going to stay on our farm and our family operation for the rest of your life. And so they approached me and said, hey, why don't we give you a 2-year internship so you can see the full farming year twice? And dad was very open about, well, you know, we're going to hand you or we're going to open up, you know, the books. Yeah. We're going to show you the contracting side of things, but also, you know, you're going to be working outside. You're going to be an hourly employee. So we're not giving you ownership in the farm yet, those kinds of things. And let's do that for 2 years, and then we'll sit down and we'll have a conversation, and we'll see, does it fit for us, and does it fit for you? And I know that they were very adamant that we really sit down and have that conversation. So at about 2 years, you know, he came in, and we sat down and had a cup of coffee, and we both decided that it was definitely working and going in the right direction. But it was really nice to not have to, you know, at the age of 22, say, hey, do you want to take over our farm's legacy and
no
decide
pressure.
That? And now, yeah. That was, so I think it was really good to have that sort of take the emotion out of the decision that we all knew was a big decision.
Yeah. And I think these decisions, obviously they don't come lightly, and what a great way for your parents to allow you to ease into that, but get a real look at it. So, we all know if in family business and in family farming and the legacy that's attached to that, that these conversations can be really tough. Can you tell us maybe a little insight onto how that went for your family? And if it went well, it sounds like it did. Maybe your thoughts on why that went well?
Yeah, well, I think part of the reason was we never, as kids growing up, and I've talked to my siblings about this too, is we never felt, we always felt like we had opportunity here, but we never felt like they expected us to come back. And on the flip side of that, we never felt like the farm was our fallback. So I think that's an important thing to distinguish is we knew that we had a good life here, but we knew that it wasn't the only opportunity out there. And, you know, my parents would have been fine if no one had come back to the farm. But at the same time, I think that, you know, they raised us to appreciate, you know, what we have here. So it's kind of a double-sided thing where we all were working together to sort of know that no one was forcing us to come back. And this wasn't our fallback, but it was an opportunity for maybe one of us to kind of grab a hold of. I will say that I have an older sister, and she is an insurance agent and is really successful, doing great with her own business. And then I also have a younger brother. So a lot of people ask me, you know, if I have a brother, because that's kind of the where a lot of people go to when they think of who's going to take over the farm is the son. And I'll be honest that when I decided I wanted to be a farmer, come back to this business, I definitely called him and said, you know, where are you kind of heading? Because he was in college at the time. And he is a very successful mechanical engineer, so he's doing great. But, you know, he, I think, said, you know, basically, I would probably come back if you didn't, but, you know, I'm great. Like, I am really happy the direction that I'm going to. So it really worked out that it wasn't super complicated between my siblings and I. And I think that helps the conversation a lot as well, that everyone was sort of going in the direction that they thought was right for them at the time.
Yeah. And I'm noticing a repeating theme here too, and that's communication. You know, you called your brother, you and your dad sat down over coffee and you talked these things out versus being like, I'm gonna cross my fingers and just hope that this goes okay. Which I think, I mean, there's many times I find myself being not dealing upfront with a situation that I don't really want to deal with or know how to deal with, you know, but I think that open communication is like a key.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, the funny thing is when we were transitioning, because there's, you know, it's one thing to say you're going to have a successor or things like that, but then to actually successfully move a business to the next generation, the communication thing, the one thing that surprised me was even after we had moved the business, and Dad kind of stopped, he basically retired and he said, you know, I don't want to have to show up every day. But because he wasn't showing up every day, I still had to have that communication with him. So our communication had to actually go a lot higher because right. I would have to talk to the guys and then go talk to Dad and keep him in the loop for a few years to make sure, you know, that he was comfortable with how things were moving also. But, you know, it's kind of surprising how much communication it takes, but it's definitely the ongoing communication.
Yeah, I do think that's the key. Well, I love these points. Thank you so much. We are getting ready to head to break here, but we'll be back here in just a few minutes with Brenda. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the diversity of their farming operation, what she's done since she came back, and how they work as a family together today. So stick with us, obviously, so you can hear more from Brenda. And I want to remind all of you, head over to farmher.com. For every TV episode, I write a blog. There's pictures up there. There's links to video clips on YouTube, all kinds of content that you can see and watch to explore that person's story a little bit further. So farmher.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We are talking to Brenda Ferkatich, who is a Farm Her in Oregon. And as I said earlier, she's going to be featured on Farm Her on RFD TV. So you can see Brenda's story through the absolutely beautiful video that our videographers captured there and really immerse yourself in her story. But today we're talking about some of the detail pieces, I think. So Brenda, one of the things that struck me about your farm is the diversity. You guys grow so many different crops on 1,000 acres, which is just, it kind of blew my mind when we were there. So if you would talk a little bit about, have you always had that diversity there? Have you increased it since you've been a part of the farm? And if it hasn't changed, then just tell us about the diversity that you guys have.
Yeah, so it's changed a lot, actually. So my grandpa, I said I'm third-generation farmer, so my grandpa started farming, and he did a lot of grains and some grass seed, but then when my dad came onto the farm, they were almost completely grass seed. So I'm talking like tall fescue and perennial ryegrass that's used in turf fields for sports and then, you know, in lawns, all that kind of stuff, reclamation projects, all of that. And so then in 2008, when the housing market took a crash, that definitely, and the golfing market, people were not paying money to go golfing anymore. So a lot of things sort of happened at once. And at that point, we moved the farm in almost a completely different direction. Now we raise usually around a dozen different crops per year. We've actually, I'll say we were wall-to-wall grassy, but we also had a number of acres of hazelnuts as well. So those were kind of our two crops for a really long time. And now we're growing the hazelnuts, grass seed. We're doing wheat and clover for seed. And then we're growing a number of different vegetables and vegetable seeds as well. So a lot of seed crops, but we've changed the diversity of our farm quite a bit. And most of that was just in response to sort of having all of our, or a lot of eggs in one basket during that fallout.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's good to go through things like that, those downturns where you realize we got to do something different here to make this sustainable. So
yes.
I know one of the interesting things that I saw when we were there, you guys had just had your pumpkins harvested for seed. So it's not harvested for the pumpkins, but there's machines that come in and just take the seeds out. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So we grow the pumpkin or the squash, and then the harvesters come in. They actually row them up and kind of bump them off the vine and put them into rows. And then the harvesters come through and they pick up the pumpkins and they smash them with a big rotating drum. And then the seeds are separated from all of that organic matter, basically, and that just all goes back into the soil. And then they take the seeds and they're used for not for planting, but for edible seeds. So, you know, the salted seeds that you get in the snack store.
Yeah, I don't know where I thought those came from. I mean, I know they came out of a pumpkin, but I'd never really thought about where those actually come from and what that process looks like and how you have to get those out. So that was interesting. And then the main thing that we saw when we were at your farm was the hazelnuts. And as I said, you haven't seen the cut from this yet, but it's funny at the end, and we'll talk a little bit about the process of harvesting the hazelnuts here in a second, but at the end, it's very dusty, right? Like, very dusty isn't even enough explanation for how dusty it is.
Yeah.
I've never seen so much dust in my life, but like John, our videographer was like, sit there and blog as she's coming up and the harvesters like blowing all this dust around in the background. I'm like, nobody would ever be sitting there with like this huge impending dust cloud coming down on them. And yes. at the end, if you wait till the end of the credits and he's like, get up, get out of there, go. And so I'm like scrambling away with my computer. Like, oh, it was just funny.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you would tell everybody a little bit about, I learned they're called filberts or hazelnuts. Can you tell everybody a little bit about that process?
Yeah. So, I'll say filberts is what people from Oregon usually call them. And then hazelnuts is sort of the more refined term that other folks use. But we wait for them to actually naturally fall. So we don't have to shake them like you see in a lot of almond orchard situations. But we wait for them to naturally fall to the ground. And then we come through with what we call as a sweeper. And it does just that. It essentially sweeps them into one row that goes down the center of each row of trees. The harvester then drives with the tractor straight over the top of the row and using different belts and paddles, picks up off the ground, puts them through some chains to get rid of some dirt. The big fan is what causes all the dust, and that gets rid of a lot of the husks and leaves and little sticks that we also tend to pick up. And then they go into a tote, and from there on out, it's about 8 days until they're dried, and then at that point they're preserved, and then they go off into like a million different markets for for everyone to enjoy our hazelnuts.
Yeah. And as I kept saying in the episode after I watched it, they make their way into my coffee creamer as a flavoring somehow or another. You have a lot going on all of the time. And I know, you know, when we wrap these stories up, it looks very neat and tidy, but we all know there's ups and downs and ins and outs, and you're running, I know, in many different directions. You guys have a group of women there in Oregon that, from the outside looking in, it looks like you guys really like join together and hold each other up. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, Oregon has been a difficult place in agriculture. And I think one of the reasons is because, well, across the U.S., we're a small part of the population, right? So for us, politically, a lot of times you find these allies at the Capitol. And so that is kind of one of the things that first brought us together is it was this group of gals. We're all about the same age. We've all, you know, we're all farming pretty much, or we're all really involved in the agricultural business. And we kept finding ourselves on the, you know, going and testifying together, or being in groups where we were, you know, on commercials for different measures and things that were on the ballot. And so we just struck a friendship. We all have little kids. We're all kind of in that stage of life where everything's hitting all at once. And we're all, like you said, going in a million different directions. But we're able to sort of have this group where we can discuss things from personal to political to agricultural, you know, even questions about, hey, what are you paying for fertilizer? Or, you know, what are things look like on in your tall fescue field this year, fields, things like that. So I think that it's been really valuable to find that group of women that we're able to kind of be upfront and have a place where we can all talk to each other and still, you know, we can still talk about professional things, but also about personal things as well.
Which I think matters. I mean, I see groups of women like this all around the country that have kind of come together in their areas. And it seems to me like it helps you through some of those times when you're like, ugh, I don't know about this, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, farming is a really risky business. And, you know, it does, like you said, it comes with a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And it is definitely difficult if you don't have somebody that you can discuss that with, who understand, you know, that some of those lows that come from the farm might also come with the day that three of your kids get sick. And, you know, it kind of changes the dynamic of how you are and where you're at mentally. And so to have people that you can discuss that with that you feel like are going to understand, or at least just have an outlet, even if they don't understand, at least just have someone to talk to about it, is really important.
Yeah, wonderful. I very much appreciate your perspective. We preach this all the time that you got to find your people, and it will make this road a little bit easier or a little bit more bearable, like during those lows, like you said, or someone to celebrate the highs with too, right? That gets
that. Oh
yeah,
that. For sure.
Well, thank you, Brenda, so much for being here on Shining Bright. As I've talked about before, we have an amazing lineup of Farm Her events all around the country. I want to encourage all of you to head over to our website, farmher.com. Click the events tab, and there you can see more about what we have going on, where the tickets are available. You know, and we'd love to see you at those events, because in this discussion about how important those people are to surround us, we promise you, you'll meet some of those people at these events. So stick with us here on Shining Bright. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We are wrapping it up, and Brenda stuck with us here in this final segment that is like a sprint, it feels like sometimes in a conversation. But Brenda, so when we left, we were talking about that group of women that you have around you. But one of the things that we've been trying to talk about a lot more from her this year is mental health. And I think along with that goes how we take care of ourselves a little bit. And I know you have three little kids, very little kids, right? And they're part of the farm. They're in and out around you during the day. You are running a business. You have, like you said, 11 or 12 crops, such diversity. You always have something going on. And you and your husband are the labor too, in so much of the farm. So you have a lot going on. How How do you get to practice any self-care? Do you do anything to take care of yourself? And if so, what are some of those things?
I try to wash my face like once a day.
That helps.
Yeah, that does help. Yeah. No, seriously, I've tried to be sure to get help like with our childcare as I need it. So yeah. I do have 4 days a week during the slower months that people come and either come to our house or we take them, our kids to them. And just being able to kind of, I know it probably sounds terrible to say this, but to separate me from being a mom on the farm, to be able to sit down and be a farmer, to be a businesswoman, to have days where I can schedule a meeting and I pretty much know unless someone gets sick, I'm going to be able to make it, is really important to me. And I think that if I didn't do that, it would just be total chaos, to be honest, in my life. So for me, that's really important. And then during the summer, when we're really busy, we actually have someone come in and help another day a week. And it's usually one of our nieces or a cousin or something like that. So it's fun for the kids. They love it. They love that they get to be outside anyway. They don't, you know, they love to have me there. But at the same time, just asking for that help and being very realistic with my timeline that I need to sit down and do this farming thing or do this business side and put the kids aside for a little bit has been really important for me.
I couldn't agree with that more. I've said this to my husband many times that I couldn't have ever foreseen this, and I don't even know really how to describe it. But when my kids are around, my brain is in mom mode. So I can't, like, even if they're in the other room, I can't just shut that part of my brain off and absolutely focus on something else. You know, it just doesn't work that way in my brain. So I get that very much. It can be a really tough thing.
Well, and even, you know, with the days where I am home all day with the kids and Matt will come back from the farm and we'll try to have a conversation about, you know, what's going on at the farm or what we need to do tomorrow. And it is so difficult for me to wrap my brain around even that shift. You know, like you said, you're in mom mode. Like I think it's a real thing, like to only be able to focus on what's going on at home. And all I think about is, well, I've got to do this laundry. Like, I don't know about what the employees are doing. You know,
I can't think about that.
I know. So yeah, maybe it'll get better, but I don't know. I think you just get better at juggling it or at least being realistic with yourself about where you're at mentally.
Yeah. So Tony and I work together too. And we sometimes find ourselves having these conversations with the kids around, and I'm beginning to think maybe I've just fried all of like the receptors in my brain that have allowed me to like actually think, but whatever, it's fine. We'll just keep tracking. What is a trait that you have that you are most proud of, or you think, you know, carries you the furthest in life?
I think having thick skin, to be honest, has been a really good part of where I've gotten myself today. I don't know. I was just never raised to think like, oh, I get this question a lot about being a woman in agriculture, right? Where it's a male-run industry and, you know, how does that feel or what does that look like to you? And a lot of the times it doesn't really look different to me because I think I was just raised to be, you know, you just are a person, you know, you're someone who it's not that they're, you know, there's not women in agriculture because they couldn't do it. You know, I've never heard that from my family, from my dad. It was, you know, well, is this a fit for you personally? And it is, and it works for me. And so I think part of that is I just don't even, you know, sometimes I feel like, am I missing something? Like, should I be more upset about, you know, the fact that I'm the only girl in the room? But I think on the other hand, I just don't even notice it, you know? And I think that makes other people not necessarily notice it. Or if they do, they just give me a hard time and then we all move on. Like, it's funny, right?
Thick skin.
So, yeah, thick skin. I think that was good.
I like it. Well, that was excellent. We have run ourselves right out of time. So thank you so much, Brenda, for getting on the phone with us today. And for any of you who want to, like I said, see more about Brenda, you can tune in to Farm Her on RFD TV. It airs Fridays and Sundays at 9:30 Eastern on RFD TV. You can stream it on Roku and Amazon Fire Stick as well. You can see more of the details on our website, farmher.com. So thank you everybody for joining us here today. You've been listening to Shining Bright by Farm Her. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern and Saturday at noon Eastern on SiriusXM's Rural Radio Channel 147 and the SiriusXM app. And now, go shine bright. Up next week on the podcast, we will have an episode about moving on. We're going to start with Carrie Portell, who is a woman who has overcome immense odds to continue her love of farming and find her place in life. And then we're going to take it to Melissa Eshelman, an Iowa farm her, who also has experienced some great difficulties as she's moved into the farming world. And she just keeps that smile on her face and she just keeps going. She's got new things going on with her business. Such a fun episode again on the Shining Bright podcast next week.